And welcome to another edition of As You Wish Talk Radio. This is Ashley, part of the Isetti crew, not actually sitting in for James Gillen. I'm here once again to introduce the discussion that took place between James and Ethan Fox of Awake and Empowered TV. This second part of that discussion is being aired on Saturday, March 19th, 2016, while James is actually in Detroit presenting at Ethan's Awaken Empowered Expo. James will be on some panels and also doing some talks on Sunday, so if you happen to be in the Detroit area and haven't made a point of going out to experience the great expo that Ethan and Natasha and his amazing crew have all put together, I do encourage you to do that. But for now, sit back, relax, and enjoy the interview and the discussion. We're going to start with Ethan asking James about Anunnaki. I'll come back at the end to summarize and to update you on what's happening at Isetti.
For those people who may not be familiar, I'm sure most people who watch a show like this are familiar with who the Anunnaki are. But for those who may be new to it, can you give us kind of an explanation of who they are and how they're related to us now?
Well, basically what happened, 450,000 years ago plus, and we're finding out it's even beyond that. It goes back even further, probably millions and millions of years. But they actually originated in Lyra, ancient Lyra. And the Lyrians are very tall. They're very big. The ancient Lyrians are. And then... Nibiru is just a satellite. It was like a colony, basically. Everybody goes, oh, they come from Nibiru. No, they didn't come from Nibiru. They came from ancient Lyra. But the ancient Lyrians actually went out, and they were kind of I don't want to say a conquering race, but they're explorers, and because of their extreme technology and their advancement, they just kind of absorbed planets, in a way. And they went to the Pleiades system, the Hades system, and the Orion system and set up colonies there. And then the people adjusted to the planets over the, thousands of years. And then they came to Earth, Mars, and Maldek, which is the asteroid belt now that blew up. But the image of the bearded god was from the Lyrians that were here, a long time ago. And this what goes into the trip to Australia was the elders there and a guy by the name of Stephen and Evan Strong. And it's a father-son combination. I forgot their website, but if you type in Stephen Strong Australia, it'll come up. And they've been doing this research, about the, with the Gosford glyphs and other glyphs that are there. And they had Egyptologists come out and talk about it. And they have these Pleiadian glyphs that are from the Pleiades, and the elders all know where they come from, and they could say from the Pleiades. Well, that was the Pleiades was one epoch, like Atlantis and Lemuria. Those were started by the Pleiadians, and those are Pleiadian colonies. Well, the Lyrians came here even before that, a long time before that, and found a man to be fair, a knuckle dragger, and added their genetics. And it's all written in stone on this wall, and added their genetics to the to this knuckle dragger. And the whole story just goes on, the story that we know about, where they needed the gold that created as an aerosol to protect their planet. Because when Nibiru came around the sun, it just got fried. And actually that experiment, from my understanding, failed because they lost their atmosphere, and it's just no longer a functioning colony. But the but that's the story that Sitchin talks about, but he, missed some of the points. He doesn't have the whole story, he has some of it. But the so that's basically the story. But it was kind of weird because they actually broke universal law by tinkering with this this primitive human that was evolving naturally on the earth. And, but they did it to save their colony. So they're in like a situation where they go, okay, we're bending the rules a little bit because we're trying to preserve our colony. And so that's kind of how it did. And then the problem with that is they left a couple hundred people here. Might even be more of that. The numbers are vary from 200 to 2,000, but you know, everybody has deciphers this information differently. But they did leave some groups here, and they were supposed to oversee this creation that they created and kind of guide them as overseers. And then they got caught up in turf wars and competition, and they fell, you know, they fell in consciousness. And those are the fallen ones. And, you know, everybody has a name for them, the fallen gods or the fallen angels or whatever. They fell and got caught up in all this stuff. And there's all these battles between Enki and Enlil. Enki was the image of the creator god. He was the one that was the geneticist. He loved his creations and wanted to improve on them and keep them going. Enlil was the warrior. You know, he was the general. And he was the wrathful god, you know, the jealous, wrathful god. And he, you know, wanted the experiment to end. He wanted to just, you know, the when the floods came and the pole shift and everything else, that was his delight, you know, to see this experiment finished. You know, the problem was Noah was a hybrid. He was half Anunnaki and half human that was already jumped up quite a bit, you know, genetically improved model. So he was a hybrid. What happened with a hybrid, they didn't expect this, but the union of human genetics and their genetics actually started creating a superior being that actually was evolving beyond them. And so Noah was one of those beings. He reached like eternal life and everything. He mastered a very high level of spirituality and everything. And Enlil was very jealous of this. He's going, what this hybrid, how can this happen? You know, this is not, it's not our pure race, you know, and was very upset about that. So, and Enki was protecting Noah, you know, and warning him and things like that. So it just gives you more light on the subject of what really happened. And what I'm finding out now too, is that with the technology that we have now, there's Dr. Emoto's office, which is taken over by Dr. Nemoto with an N, and they're doing all this incredible experimentation. And now they're finding out they can transfer DNA with a laser light. And actually water holds DNA, it holds the pattern. And so with this new light and this new information now, you know, the Immaculate Conception and all these other things we hear about take a whole new light. It's like yesterday's magic is today's science, you know. So, you know, it's when you really look at this stuff from a higher perspective and do your research, you go, okay, you know, that would be very easy to jump up the genetics of certain individuals and have a highly evolved soul come in there and then become a messiah, you know, or become a master like a, and it happened with all the races that they did that with a lot of different races like Buddha and all these people. They're extremely advanced souls that they actually had to create a vehicle for them to inhabit because they'd burn out the synapses of a normal human body. So there's, you know, there's so much more to the story than we've been given, you know, in the religious approach, you might say.
Now you've just written a book that's hot off the presses from what I understand. You're going to have it for the first time at our upcoming expo in about a week and a half here. Can you tell us about that book? What's it called and what is it about?
Well, it's about the Anunnaki return, and it's about the star nations and the days to come is the title. But I've had these beings appear to me, and they're the benevolent Anunnaki, the Council of 12 that never fell. They didn't come to Earth and go through all the chaos that happened. And they're returning to right or wrong to help in this huge cleanup process. And they're involved with the Pleiadians, the Orion Council of Light, and the Sirians and Arcturians and Andromedans, and there's a major effort right now to clean up what happened in the fall. A lot of people don't realize, if you really do the research, like Marduk is on the Dinar, you know, and he's one of the Anunnaki, and he was one of the fallen Anunnaki, and he actually wanted total superiority over the earth and rulership. So he made a pact with the reptilian beings and some other beings, which we're still cleaning that mess up today. And so it's all carved right there in stone. I mean, I can show you hieroglyphs and everything else that tell the story. But, you know, they're coming to help clean that up, to clean that mess up, to deal with the tyrants and the overlords and the unseen energies that have been affecting and influencing the earth. And it's basically an end of tyranny. Tyranny is coming to an end because of these forces that are coming in now. And it goes back to frequency. They work with frequencies and light and energy. And so everything begins in consciousness and it goes down to light, then energy, and then mass. And they're working on the higher levels and the grids and changing the grids here. And, you know, opening the door for this fifth dimensional grid to come in. And so it's going to be an end of tyranny. There's going to be no support, energetic support system for the tyrants, you know, that are scrambling right now to keep their kingdoms, you know, that they've gotten with ill-gotten gain, you know.
So do you have any concept of time frame as to when you see all these things happening?
We're in it now. We're right in the middle of it right now. And you could, if you observe this stuff from another level, this energy is pushing everything up to the surface. It's making everything transparent. And the stuff that even these politicians used to get away with is all surfacing, and all their dirt is coming up and their real agendas and everything else. And so if you just sit back and watch, it's just, you can see this whole thing evolve, you know, and all the backers, you know, that are coming up and the world leaders that are, shouldn't be where they're at. I mean, they should be, you know, anywhere else, but where they're at are being shown for who they are and what their agendas are. So, it covers all of that. It covers the vibrational continuum. It covers the lower infrared levels of fourth dimension where the malevolent ETs are and reptilians and some grays and things like that. All the way up to the higher levels of the astral level where there's teachers and guides that are still stuck on the wheel, but they haven't mastered unity consciousness yet. They're still operating from a different level. There's some religious belief or some culture belief that keeps them separate. They haven't let go of yet. And then the ones off the wheel, it covers them, the fifth dimensional beings and sixth dimensional and seventh dimensional beings. So it covers all the different groups on all the continuum, how they've interacted with us in the past, and how we can get out of this, you know, and go forward. So that's the main focus of the book.
You're recently in Australia, and you had some interesting experiences there and meetings. Can you share some of the highlights of your trip?
I think one of the first things that happened was really interesting. The day I got there, you know, I just went and crashed that night. I didn't do much. And then the next night, we went out, and they had a sky watch at the house right in the middle of Melbourne, right in the city. We walked outside and I lost track. I mean, I had 25 or so ships coming right over. It was like a major, you know, welcoming party or something there. And we got a lot of that on film, you know, beautiful big power-ups coming over the house. Everywhere we went, there was activity. And when we filmed it, like all the different, we did lectures, workshops, and sky watches everywhere. We got some really good footage of the ships coming in. But I met Brendan Murray, who's king of the Raven tribe, and we're doing a documentary on this, and I'll talk about this in my workshop too. I mean, in the lecture, I'll talk about Brendan, but he's king of the Raven tribe, and so we shared a lot of information about my research, and then his research was similar, and then Uluru and the giant rocks that came from the skies and the plating connections and everything, it all tied in together, and he filled in some areas for me, and then I filled in some areas for him. It was a really good connection. And while we're there, a big old ship flew right over us and went behind the trees and everything. We got that on film. But the most interesting thing is we went to Westall, and Westall is where they had that landing where all the school kids were involved and teachers and everything. It's a very famous place. We went to Westall, and there's a park there where this ship landed, and they built a park for the kids with a big UFO in it. And plaques all over about the whole incident, telling the whole story. And they created a monument, you know, to this event. And so it's not like the government's hiding it. They actually created a monument to mark this place. And so I saw the landing places and where they landed, all the trees bend inward. They're all growing in towards the center, which is really bizarre. But the weirdest thing that happened is the ravens started coming. And they didn't stop coming. They just kept coming and coming and coming. Hundreds and hundreds of ravens just kept coming and circling us and landing in all the trees and everything. And we got it all on film, but it was our initiation, you know, into the raven tribe. But that was just amazing. It was like something out of Alfred Hitchcock, but it was really high energy. It was really positive energy when it happened. And so there's things all along the way. I kept meeting elders and they kept sharing information. And we went to the Gosford Glyphs, where everything is written in stone about the origin of man, you know, from the Pleiadian perspective. And then it has the Egyptian perspective on the two pharaohs that came there in search of the knowledge, the ancient knowledge, because everything originated in Australia, not in Africa. And they tried to take the knowledge back with them, which I think was in all these stones and things like that. And they, one of them got bit by a snake and died, a poisonous snake. The elders said, you can't leave with that. You can't take this with you. And I think they tried to do it anyway. And so the other guy shipwrecked, you know, right off the coast there. And so the two pharaohs died, and it tells their story. One of them was actually buried there, and they dug him up and got his bones and everything. But I actually held the bones in my hand, you know, some of his bones and things, as well as some other artifacts there. But just amazing things happen. But the stories are right there in stone about the origin of man, you know, that the and the DNA, the Aboriginal DNA, they are the original people that were jumped up, you know, I think it's called the Dienese man or something, like Dienese or something. I'm not pronouncing it right. I have to get that research again. And which is like a Neanderthal type man, but they took that man and jumped his DNA up. And so that's created the Aboriginal people, and they're the original people. And what's funny is that all of us have Aboriginal genes, everybody on the planet. And so you have a certain percentage of Aboriginal genes. So we're all one, you know, on that level, we're all connected. But just seeing it in stone, I already knew a lot of this information, but I had a lot of things filled in. But when you see it written in stone and it's very ancient, it gives you a whole different perspective. It really solidifies things, you know, not to make a pun out of it, but it really grounds it.
So this original hybrid man that was made, was it human or was it something different?
It was human.
Okay. So it looks like we look now then.
Yeah, very human.
So this original civilization, how long ago was this?
Minimum 450,000 years ago. I think they're finding it going back just millions of years. Mm-hmm. They're finding ornate jewelry and things 650,000 years, a million years old, sorry. And so Cremo's work, it shows that there's been people coming and going here, you know, ever since the trilobites were coming on shore. There's boot prints crushing trilobites and things like that. So our history is nothing like what we've been taught, you know.
So this is pre-Atlantis, I assume, in Lemuria?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Way Atlantis was ended around 12,000 years ago. And it's like way, way back. I mean, it's hard to get the right kind of, you know, to date the rocks and the other things there. They're still trying to get inaccurate, but they're pretty close. And I know, again, Stephen Evan Strong, they have all this research, and it's actually probably going to come out on ancient aliens. And so you're all hearing it first here on A&E TV. You know, people are getting a first look at all this information. So, but you know, they're going to watch and see what they do with it. If they don't do right by it, they're not going to give them any more information. So, because I know they like to sensationalize a lot of things, and sometimes they get the story wrong and things. And the Aboriginal elders are very, you know, they'll give you a little of time. They'll sense your character, your nature, and some people they won't even talk to. They'll just let you talk and say, yeah, okay, that sounds good, and they'll walk away. And then other people, they'll sense your energy, and they'll say, okay, we're going to show you some things.
Freddie Silva, who's going to be at the expo, he talks a bit about the the people who lived on Easter Island who were very tall beings. Do you have any perception on what those beings were?
You know, I'm not sure where those beings came from. Their heads are really different. I mean, they don't look like the Anunnaki. They look different. And I know I've heard stories about their origins and things like that, and that they were extremely advanced beings. Unfortunately, every one of those stone sculptures had a tablet in front of it, and it represented a certain person, and they told about their history and their enlightenment and how they ascended, basically. And those stones are still in the Vatican. They're in the catacombs in the Vatican. They smashed most of them and threw them in the ocean, but a lot of them they just took to the Vatican, and they're still there. So, you know, maybe somebody will grab one of those and bring it upstairs and let us know who they really were.
Well, you were recently in Japan, and I know you had some interesting occurrences there, as you seem to have wherever you go. So can you share some of the stories of things that happened there?
Well, you know, I thought it was interesting because the Japanese people were very, very courteous, very supportive, and they really wanted to know. They asked really good questions. I met with major scientists there like Dr. Emoto and did a lot of work with him. But what I thought was amazing is that, every lecture I did, every workshop was like a packed house. It was like a lot of interest there. But on Sunday, the last major talk and workshop I did was on Sunday. And then we looked on the news, and Sunday afternoon, a large UFO flew right over Tokyo, and it hit the mainstream news. And they didn't say meteor, Sal, they said UFO, massive UFO flies right over Tokyo. And there's footage of it. They have some footage of it. But I thought that was quite interesting how that happened in Tokyo and it hit the mainstream news. And the same thing when I went to Australia, the same thing we had. And they actually put me on Channel 9 there, which is mainstream TV, and let me talk about, what's going on with the UFOs and everything. And the people interviewing me were pretty good. They asked some pretty good questions, I thought. But it's funny that one of the woman there, I think her name was Natalia, very beautiful woman and everything. She was very skeptical. She goes, "I'm a skeptic. I don't, believe in any of this stuff and everything else." And you can see her energy change throughout the interview. And she went from just kind of a scowl to where she just, "I don't believe," closed down, to all of a sudden she just opened up and was laughing and everything else, because the evidence. And, I said, "Look, we have triple PH Boeing engineers, Air Force Base commanders, pilots, all testifying that the ships are here. We have a mountain of evidence, the footage, the video. We have 200 people on the ground, and the ships fly over and power up. And we have all that evidence." And I said, the thing about it is it's not somebody talking about Roswell or something that happened in the past. I said, it's still going on. So you can't refute it. You come out and see for yourself, bring your own cameras and equipment, take your own photographs. And towards the end, she just totally opened up and she goes, "I'm coming." She goes, "I want to come to the ranch," it was a big hit there in Australia, but just hit the mainstream news like that. And we actually had Fox News, Michael Hannity? What's his name? I'm trying to remember his name. No, Sean Hannity with Fox News actually did a special on it. It was pretty good. And he allowed me to debunk, they brought the debunkers on, but the debunkers looked really bad when I was finished with them. So I said, "Look, we're using your own sites, your own satellite data and everything else. And you're trying to say these are space stations that were mistaking, and meteors." I said, "But, these things are landing on the mountain and morphing into four and things like that. And if you don't have a landing pad up on Mount Adams, you can't make a statement like that." So it was pretty good, we showed, "Look, we're using your data and these are unknowns. They're unidentified flying object. If you can't tell me what these is, they are a UFO, period. End of story."
Are you noticing as a whole that mainstream media is starting to open up a little bit more to these kind of ideas and not make them seem illegitimate, but actually giving them more credibility, or is it just an isolated incident that you've had?
Well, you know, in Texas, what's interesting is they interviewed some people in Texas where they had some massive sightings, and they went and did a poll to see if people believe in UFOs, and it was 99% of the people said yes, you know, and that was just a blanket poll, you know, in Texas, which I thought was amazing. Back in the 80s, they did a poll like with a Time CNN poll. And 86% of the people believe that UFOs exist and there is a government cover-up. And that was how they worded it. So you're talking in the mid-80s and everything escalated since then. So, or early 80s. You know, so basically I think, you know, between the disclosure projects and everything else that have gotten out there, it's just ridiculous to try to cover this up anymore. And, you know, you've got Einstein talking about other worlds just outside of our perception. You've got Michio Kaku saying we should be looking for, you know, ETs in other dimensions and covering that. He says it's supremely arrogant for us to think we're the only ones here. So, you know, you've got all the top physicists coming out and talking about it. And it's just making the debunkers look like idiots now. I mean, they what I find out, if I play what a debunker is saying, the whole audience just goes, oh, you hear this big, like, what, you know, who is this guy? And so they've lost all credibility now. So they have to come out now. They can't keep saying, you know, it's swamp gas or weather balloons and things like that, because the preponderance of evidence that's coming out now and all over the internet now, it's you can't deny what's going on. But, you know, even the internet, just a little heads up, there is a lot of CGI out there, and there'll be a real event, like the Dome of the Rock was a real event. I mean, they had a massive UFO just come right over the Dome of the Rock and change the whole frequencies of those ley lines and everything. And I have footage of that. And then the next thing you know, they throw in all this CGI stuff and have a big metal ship come in and, you know, military showing up, and it was all CGI. And so they flood the market with CGI, and there's people that are paid to do that. You know, they're there to distract everybody, you know, and muddy the evidence.
There's a lot of talk in these alternative movements about contact and first contact. And so is this first contact that we're seeing now? I mean, what does that actually look like? And is it also maybe a matter of, I mean, does first contact require us to physically see a UFO craft land in the lawn in the White House on mainstream media? Or is first contact all these little instances of channeling and people such as yourself who are interacting with beings on multiple dimensions? What does it look like, and what do you think it's going to look like?
I'd skip the White House lawn. I mean, there's absolutely no reason to land there, you know, if you're looking for intelligent life, or, you know, you have to have an open mind, a loving heart, and pure intent. You're just not going to find that, you know, in the political arena. That just doesn't happen. And so they are contacting a lot of people, you know, that do meet the requirements, you know, that have open minds, loving hearts, and pure intent. Those are the people they're going to be working with. They're not really into working with major institutions because most of them have been corrupted, you know, because the higher you go up the ladder of power and wealth, the darker it usually gets. And so they're not going to be working, you know, they're going to be more doing things on a ground level. But I think it's funny because everybody goes, we're going to have contact, you know, in 2000, even NASA said, we're going to have contact in 2025. You know, that's their new thing. And we're going, oh my God, where have you been the past 30 years? You know, we've had contact, we've proven it. We've given the exact time and place these ships will appear, cameras rolling, they did appear. We did it with Danny Dyer, with Paranormal State, you know, Fox News, all these people. We had the cameras rolling and said, okay, we told them exactly where to have your camera when, because of the telepathic communication, which means there's contact going on. And the ships did appear. You know, we've been doing that redundantly. So to me, I think it's just ridiculous to keep saying, when are we going to have contact? You know, it's like, when are we going to acknowledge that contact has already happened and it's happening right now? And And that was one of the things I had with a lot of the ancient alien people that have that focus. They're all focused in the past. And Roswell, everything's in the past. They're not going to touch what's happening now and go further. Like, okay, who are they? You know, who are they? Why are they here? What's their culture like? You know, what's their technology like? How do they, these advanced beings live? You know, they don't touch any of that. Everything is keeping it in the past. And which I think is an agenda. Basically, there is an agenda behind it. Some are doing it unknowingly following that agenda, and some are knowingly following that agenda, because if they can keep it far away and in the past, you know, nobody has to really deal with it or face these issues. So it's really sad, but, you know, I always tell people, you know, we've had contact for over 30 years. I've had contact all my life, and we've proven it, you know, over and over again, we've proven it. So at what point do we just go, okay, stop the distraction, stop the song and dance, and let's get on with it. You know, okay, why are they here? What do they have to offer? You know, can they help us in living a more spiritually wholesome life, you know, in harmony with nature and each other? You know, do they have technology to heal? Do they have free energy technology? I mean, that's where we really should be going with this. How do we create a space where they can come and interact with us and share this wisdom? And that's been my focus all along, is like creating a template on a place where they can come and feel at peace and be able to share this wisdom.
What are some of the races that are really actively involved with us at this time?
Well, there, in the past, there's been some very negative races involved with this, some low-level grays and some low-level reptilian ETs, and there's been some serpent-type beings and things like that that are pretty nasty, and that's being cleaned up big time right now. We've always had the option of working with the more benevolent ones, and that option was always not taken because they had guidelines. You know, one of the guidelines was, okay, we'll work with you, but you have to get rid of your nukes and no more aggression. You can't keep the war industry going and things like that. You've got to shift, you know, and live under universal law, you know, which is universal peace and brother sister love you know, prosperity for everybody. It's a whole different way of living. And each time the governments and the leaders chose to go with the lower level ones because they didn't have the guidelines. You know, we'll give you technology, but in return, we want to do some experimentation with your genetics, you know. So these low-level ETs, people go, well, why do they want us? You know, we're this little primitive life form running around. And why is everybody so interested in the Earth? Well, one thing, that the Earth has been colonized, it's been terraformed, and there's 12 major star nations that added their genetics, both human, plant, and animal genetics, to this mix. And so it's an amazing place, and we have the genes of the gods. We have the Anunnaki genes, although many of them are just dormant. We have those genes, and that's why they're after us. You know, that's why they want, and they know how to activate these genes and things like that. So a lot of them are trying to upgrade themselves through us. You know, there's a lot of different stories for coming here. And so a lot of agreements were made not in our highest and best good. And we've always had that option to work with the more benevolent ones. And so now I think most of these people have learned their lessons and realized that, you know, we can no longer afford these old contracts and agreements anymore, and that we have now shift towards the more benevolent ones and do a major planetary cleanup.
I've been hearing in recent times about Corey Good and the avian race. Mm-hmm. And, well, I mean, it seems like there are a lot of people talking about different races. How do we discern between what's real and what's not in that area? And have you had any contact with the avians, for example?
I've seen some beings that were blue, and they're very interesting looking. It was just kind of fleeting. I didn't get a lot of information from them. I've seen a lot of different, there's so many different beings out there that are coming in to help us right now. I'm not exactly sure about them. I haven't even had time to look into that, but I need to do some more research on that and just do my own spiritual research on it as well. But the ones that we're working with mainly are the Palladians, have the most genetic stock in the earth right now. And so the scepter has been passed to them because of that. And so they're very evolved. They're highly evolved beings, very spiritually and technologically advanced beings. And they're very involved in the earth shift right now and what we're going through and restoring it back to Eden, which was the original intent. They're highly involved in that. The Orion Council of Light, who had to go to war with the reptilian and grays in their system and won, you know, and cleared that out finally, are actually coming here to help us at this time. And then we've got the Andromedans, which are mythologically known as archangels. They're 8 to 10 foot tall beings that have magnetized light bodies and massive light ships, and they're coming in. And you know, when you talk about the Andromedans, there's blue ones, there's magnetized light beings there, there's some little short guys. There's a lot of different groups coming out of these systems. And same thing with the Orion system, there's all kinds of different entities there coming out of these systems. But we want to pigeonhole everybody, you know, from this system is bad, and it doesn't work that way. But that's the main ones. And now the Sirians, which people are going to have a hard time with, are actually feline beings because they're going to have a hard time accepting this. But in ancient India, they call them Nerissa. They have all these different names. So they're protectors of the gods. And it shows them with the gods sitting on their lap, you know, actually sitting on their lap. And old paintings of this, they used to pray to Narsringa in a village when the bandits would come and these feline beings would show up and just knock them off their horses and shred their clothing, they'd run off. And so it's very well recorded. It's in stone in the pyramids of these feline beings walking right next to the Anunnaki. And Sekhmet is one of them. So there's a long history of these beings being around, and most of them are fifth, sixth, and seventh dimensional beings, and they're protectors of the gods. They were the protectors of the Anunnaki. But when the Anunnaki fell, they left. They said, we can't support you anymore because you're operating outside of universal law. So they left. But they're returning now. And they're one's a humanoid cat being, kind of more, and one is more of a panther type being, and one is a 17-foot tall lion being, you know, that are coming in to assist in this process. So, and those are a lot of the Sirians that are coming in. There's also some other races coming out of that system that are helping. And then, you know, the Andromedans are coming in too as well. The Arcturians are starting to show up and they're helping out quite a bit. And they have extreme technology. But those are the main ones that are coming in right now. And they're all working on behalf of humanity.
Is there any relationship between the Sirians and the Sphinx in Egypt? Or is that Sphinx just primarily just to indicate that the complex was built in the time of Leo?
Originally the Sphinx, according to the information, was a lion, you know, it had a lion head on it. And that was the representation of the guardians, you know, the lion beings. And then a pharaoh came along and put his face on it, you know, but, I think it's definitely tied into that.
So do you believe that a lot of the, ancient, Egyptian hieroglyphs that depict, humanoid type of beings with animal heads or actually different races that actually look that way?
You know, I've been kind of wondering if those weren't headdresses that they wore to depict a certain energy and like Anubis and all these other ones. Or there were actually beings. I mean, there's a lot of genetic manipulation in the past, and there were beings created that were, you know, half goat, half man, half horse, half man. They've actually found the bones, and the Smithsonian has covered it all up. But, you know, who's to say there wasn't half bird, half man? There are beings that are highly evolved bird men, you might say, too, up there, which is pretty interesting. But there's all these different beings out there. One of the physicists I talked to, what he told me, he said every form of life on the earth has a higher form attached to it. And so, you know, if you really think about it, you know, the lions here on Earth have higher dimensional beings that are attached to them, you know, that are assisting, you know. So it kind of makes sense if you think about it. After billions of years, they'd have to evolve into something, you know. They wouldn't just still be running around, you know, eating antelope.
So do you think that a lot of these ancient myths that we still are still told in movies and stories were taken from actual events that took place, for example, King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table and things like that?
Yeah, I think those things did exist. You know, those, I mean, the story came from somewhere. And I always hear that people have all these legends, you know, and then you see these legends in every culture. It's funny because if you go to most of the Native American cultures, especially the Cherokee Nation, they point as the Pleiades as their origin. If you go over here to the Hawaiians, the Kahunas, they point at the Pleiades. They said we came from the Pleiades. And if you point at the, even over in Indonesia and a lot of those countries, they all point at the Pleiades. We came from the Pleiades. In the hieroglyphs, it says the Pleiadians are telling the story how they came here and interacted with, after the first Lyrians came here, they came again and interacted with humans, you know. So there's a lot of Pleiadians that were actually stranded here. And so there's all these stories like that. And I think, you know, it came from somewhere, you know, like the unicorn stories and the centaurs and all that stuff came from something, you know. There's probably some truth to it in the ancient past.
Do you believe then that you were talking earlier about the reptilian race and a lot of the other races? Do you believe that the reptilians are no longer in control, and what gives you that confidence if you do?
Well, just from my resources on the other levels and talking to them, it's like they've cleaned up about probably 95% of that mess, but there's still some 5% of some really nasty stuff going on. And their puppets, you know, which are the Illuminati and the banksters and things like that, are just floundering right now. They're, because they've lost their puppet masters. And so just watching how that's all unfolding now is very clear. And a lot of people go, well, you know, I have the photographs of the stone carvings of these beings and where it's carved in stone and everything else representing, you know, this historical account of these things. But the thing about it is that people need to realize is that when you look at all the inhuman stuff happening here on the earth, the reason for that is that it's coming from an inhuman source. And that's the only way it would happen. You know, it's being inspired by non-humans, you know. And so, you know, as we go up that hierarchical ladder of power and wealth, it gets darker and darker until you get to where the guys are doing ceremony and they're doing sacrifices and crazy stuff to bring in the dark forces and align with them for power and wealth and notoriety or whatever. And that's the unseen forces that have been really wreaking havoc on the planet. They're being cleaned up right now.
So you believe that human nature is inherently more positive and good. Do you think that that's because in some way, on a deep genetic level, because our origins are with the Palladian race and other advanced races, that maybe on a deep genetic level, we are just pre-programmed to be that way? Is that where all that belief is coming from?
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, you take a kid, when the kid comes in, even though they do have some past life influences, by nature, you know, they're innocent, you know, they're very, you know, very tapped in. And then that all gets kind of beat out of them through social consciousness and schools and peer pressure and things like that. So I think inherently, you know, in man's heart of hearts, everybody wants to live, you know, a loving, joyous, prosperous life, you know, in connection with whatever their image of the creator is. That's innate within everyone. But, you know, we just get hijacked from that, you know, through social consciousness and the pressures and the powers that be or were, I like to say, that are falling apart right now. So, you know, it's a lot of conditioning, a lot of programming, a lot of influencing going on so many different levels. It'd take three shows to cover it, you know, to get humans to do what they do.
Well, let's switch gears and talk about the financial system, the global financial system, and in the U.S. What are you seeing happening in the financial system and even in the governmental structures that exist? Are there any changes taking place? Because I know when we first talked, which was, I think, about a year ago, we were talking about some of those transitions that you foresaw that were coming down the line in the future. Have any of those things happened? And are there any other things that are in the process that you're aware of? Mm-hmm.
You know, from the sources, and I have some sources on some pretty high levels, and I actually talk with, you know, people like the Golden Dragon, the head of the whole scene of what's going on over there. The White and the Red Dragon are just holding, they're holding the assets. They can't move them or do anything without, you know, the Golden Dragon. So a lot of these assets are being moved right now. They got hung up for a while by the cabal, did everything they could to stop this from happening, and they're starting to move again. And so these assets are going to be made available. And there's just enormous amounts of just in the interest accounts, not the gold itself. They don't even have to touch the gold. The other accounts could totally end poverty and hunger and everything, you know, and put an end to most diseases. But those are finally being starting to move and being released. I know there's going to be a lot of changes. I really don't. The Federal Reserve is totally insolvent. You know, all these Puerto Rican companies that are running the earth right now, and actually the USA are, I don't think they're going to stay together very much longer. You know, they've had their run. And they're very enslaving and very disempowering and zero integrity, you know, the energy behind them. So I think what's happening on the big picture, there's just an enormous amount of wealth being siphoned off the people, going to the Vatican and the Queen and things like that. If people knew how much that was, and that's going to come to an end and be diverted back to the people, then we're going to have a huge surge, you know, and people being a lot more abundant, a lot more prosperous, and we'll be seeing an end to all the, you know, the poverty and disease and the homeless and everything else. And we're in the middle of that process right now. I don't know exactly how long it's going to take, but I know it's going to happen within the next 2 years.
A lot of people in spiritual and alternative circles have been talking about in the recent weeks, actually, that there was some sort of a release of financial abundance. I don't really know what that means, but
yeah.
Is that what you're referring to? And has something like that happened?
You broke up a little bit there, but I'm pretty sure I know what you're asking. You know, the funds are starting to move, but I'd be very careful with, there's a lot of people saying they have access to these funds that don't. And a lot of people are paying money into these things, and they're saying, hey, if you pay this amount of money, you're going to get $1 billion. You can buy your new boat and condo and on the beach and everything else. It isn't going to work that way, because these funds are going to be going from the bottom up. And so I know the people on the top are very concerned with this. And they said there's a lot of people making promises in their name that aren't going to be held up, you know, and then they're going to get blamed for it, because they're not going to allow this to be hijacked again like so many other processes. And it's going to be really going to the people that are already in the business of serving humanity, that have a track record of it, and they're going to make sure that the money does go in a direction that is going to be towards the awakening healing process, and not into somebody's own bank account or you know. And it's sad, because there's this big new age movement. Well, you're just living in lack, you know, and you have the Saint Germain fund and this fund, and we're all going to get $1 billion, you know, and, you know, I just hear all these stories, and I just said, well, let's take care of the homeless first, you know, let's take care of the people that don't have water, you know, any clean drinking water, you know, or food. Let's do that first. And then if there's money left over, then you can have your fancy boat and your Mercedes and your condo, you know. But and I think that's possible. We all could be, I mean, to me, I go, you know, forget about the Mercedes. I want a beam ship, you know. I don't care about fuel-less technology. I want anti-gravity or counter-gravity. You know, it's like I'd take it to the next level. And all that technology is available. It's on the planet right now. It just has to be released. And I think eventually that's all going to be released.
What do you think is behind the all the incidences going on with the Bureau of Land Management and confiscating ranches and so on? What's the intention behind that?
Well, if you look at the real story behind that, it goes back to Hillary and other people that sold the mineral rights, the uranium rights, to, I think it's called Uranium One, which was I think it was a Canadian company that actually the Russians bought it. And those farmers are on those minerals, you know, basically. And so they're trying to get them out of there. They're trying to get all the farmers out of there and going about it whatever way is possible. And I experienced a lot of that myself, the same type of event. And these guys are standing up for it. They're going, hey, wait a second. You know, it's like, no, I don't want to leave my farm. No, you're not going to burn me out, or you're not going to, and they're standing up for the basic human rights and constitutional rights or things like that. And so, you know, people need to really get behind them. I think his name's Lavoie, the one that got shot. You know, they're trying to demonize him and turn him into this demon type guy. The problem was the guy had like 50 foster children that he took care of. He was a staunch Christian, you know, salt of the earth farmer. And they can't demonize him. As much as they try to, they can't. And these guys are just standing up for their rights, you know, and saying, no, you're not gonna sell our land to other corporations. We own this land. And the other people are saying, no, we own it, and you're out, you know. And so it goes back to just same thing. It's back to just pure greed and some very unconscious actions and zero integrity, you know, with these, a lot of the politicians and things like that. You know, it's you know, they've already got their land sold to other interests. They already have it sold. Now they got to get rid of the farmers, you know, so that's a lot of what's going on.
I think you mentioned Bill Gates tried to buy your ranch, right?
Yeah, one time they sent an agent there, and that's what she said. And she kept making offers, and they kept saying, no, it's not for sale, it's not for sale. And she kept saying, everything's for sale, you know, name your price. And I said, no, it has, this place is a retreat center. It's a vortex. It's very important to the earth. It needs to be maintained. And they just couldn't understand that, you know, they kept, and then all hell broke loose after that when I kept refusing. Then next thing you know, the county was coming after me, and people coming out of Seattle were coming after me, and, you know, making up all these fictitious claims you know, saying I didn't have building permits when the permit was still on the building, all signed off, you know, and it was just one thing after another. And you know, you put two and two together, you figure that's probably where it was coming from, because, you know, why are people coming out of Seattle, you know, to try to, you know, close me down and get me out of there? But you know, it's really interesting. And when I look into his nature and what he's doing and what he's publicly said, you know, about how the inoculations are going to take care of the population control problem and things like that on TED Talks and things, you know, and they had like 12 something cases of polio. And when they're done with their inoculation program, they had 45,000, you know, pop right up. And so you look at what's going on. I mean, this is common knowledge. The Indian government wants him for questioning to find out why, you know, why this happened. And so these people are just not who you think they are. You know, everybody's trying to get money, you know, and say, why don't you have them finance you? And I said, do you have any idea who these people are? You know, they're all part of that program, you know, the elitist program. So, and it's very well known. His whole family's been into, you know, eugenics you know, they have a history of that, wanting to, you know, get the population down to a very low level. You know, they want 80% of us gone, basically, which ties into the chemtrails and the inoculations and the novelties and the inoculations and everything else that's going on.
You mentioned earlier that the United States is insolvent. Now, it is insolvent, but is the U.S. corporation actually dissolved now? Do you know?
Well, according to the resources that the access I have, you know, and these things you can't really verify, you know, but I do have it on some very high authority that it is insolvent. The papers have been signed to restore the republic, but the cabal are still doing all they can to stop it from happening. And there's a General Dunsford, I guess, that signed the papers. Everything's been signed over to restore the Republic, and they're trying to do this without creating panic, but and have a smooth transition, you know, and the Federal Reserve note is going to be phased out, and the Treasury note is going to take its place. And most people just go to the ATM machine and ask for money, and it'll come out as a Treasury note versus a federal note. That's basically all they're going to see if it works smoothly the way it's supposed to work. But, you know, the cabal are always coming in and doing false flags and creating all kinds of problems because they want to just collapse everything and go into chaos. You know, and that's what's going on right now within that system. So I know they've blown up his car, and they've put snipers on him, and they've General Dunsford, and they've tried to take him out, and they missed, which is probably going to backfire on them, you know, on the cabal and their puppets. So it's going to get real interesting. I think there's going to be a mass cleanup coming up very soon.
You've been listening to part two of a two-part discussion between James Gilliland and Ethan Fox of Awaken Empowered TV. As you heard James mention at the end, there is a lot of cleanup happening at the moment. For many of you, it may feel like things are falling apart around you, and that is part of what's happening as we move into the new reality. You'll be happy to hear that James will be back on air live next weekend, Saturday, March 26th. And at that time, he will go deeper into some of the changes that are happening behind the scenes. And what he knows as of this moment is the timeline, which, as you know, timelines shift for when we may begin to see more of it in 3D. Also, they talked about the Anunnaki and the ancient civilizations and the information that James became aware of in Australia with the petroglyphs that related the story, the connection between the Pleiadians and the Egyptians. That information is available in James's fourth book, Anunnaki Returns, Star Nations, and the Days to Come. Now, that's available in what we're jokingly calling a limited edition collector's version on Amazon.com and Lulu.com, because he was so committed to getting that book ready before the expo this weekend that it went out without a lot of editing. So we're doing a little fun contest. If you do order a book, if you read it and you pick out the typos and send me an email to estudy2016@gmail.com with the page number and the typo, whoever finds the most typos by May 1st will actually win an Estudy t-shirt. So just something we're doing for fun. The first part of this interview with Ethan Fox was aired last weekend, March 12th, if you're looking for it in the archives. Don't forget that the super early bird discount registration for the SETI 2016 conference ends March 28th. You can read all about the conference on our event website, privateinvitationesETI.com. The ranch opens on May 12th this weekend, our first Skywatch weekend. If you're in the area or feel like coming by to celebrate that opening, you can also register on privateinvitationesETI.com. We have a workshop the following weekend with Aurelian and Angelica, Higher Self Connection. And of course, Memorial Day weekend is James's signature workshop, Ambassador Training. Availability for all of those is on that website, privateinvitationesETI.com. Once again, my name is Ashley, and I want to thank you for your support as I sat in for James on the radio program a couple of times while he was traveling through Japan and Australia. It's been my honor to share this time with you. For those of you that are coming to the ranch, I look forward to meeting with you. And those of you that are in our collective community, we're all connected, remember. Remember that when you look up, and remember that when you look into your heart. And most importantly, stay in touch with your own mastery. Good night and mahalo.